This is the first of five sessions preparing for the Cottonwood Retreat in 2013, exploring different aspects of practice. This first one is about difficulties and obstacles of practice, given by Terry Iddens on September 11th, 2013.
Believe it or not, there's only five Wednesdays before Cottonwood, counting this one. Jim and Linda suggested that we might use these Wednesdays to benefit by exploring different aspects of practice. What's good about it, what's bad about it, what's easy, what's hard. And so Linda and I are going to attempt co-teaching each week between now and Cottonwood in this exploration of what is practice. And it seems apropos because at Cottonwood, some of us will be meditating regularly within the retreat. For those who don't go to the retreat, it's really beneficial to try to ramp up your meditation during that time, both to ride the wave, if you believe in waves, from the retreat energy, and also to support the retreat in your own way, with your own personal practice. And whether you believe all of that or not, establishing a daily practice is really beneficial. Tonight, let's talk about the difficulties in doing that. Now, it might be that each of you in the room has a strong daily practice and I'm preaching to the choir. But even if you do, I expect that you might occasionally encounter some difficulties in that practice. And so maybe our exploration tonight will shed new light on those difficulties. It seems like nobody in the world likes training, at least at the beginning, whether it's training in nutrition or exercise or sleep habits or foreign languages or memorization, we all find resistance to that. So obstacles and resistance to training, to starting something new and sticking with it, are universal, are inevitable, will happen. You can expect them. That's just one of the things that's arising. And one of my favorite teachers says, no obstacles, no progress. Simple as that. We learn through our mistakes, we learn through our obstacles, we learn through looking at our resistance. Linda and I have noticed, and maybe some of you have, the benefits of practice, just in this group, as time goes on, we notice that more and more people practicing enhance the quality of this meditation. The more practitioners there are here, the more one can feel the increased depth and solidity just of our little meditation session. We also notice that there's less attachment to personal stories as people meditate more. There's more self-monitoring and group monitoring of each other, mutual group support. And the questions asked by the group members have become richer and juicier as more and more people have their own practice. Nonetheless, establishing a daily practice and then maintaining it through thick and thin is difficult for all of us. So let's look at some of those difficulties together to start with. And I would ask that you all try to overcome shyness and reticence and worry about saying something stupid and share what you have found in your own experience to be obstacles to practice. I will ask just one thing to guide this sharing, and that is that you don't bring up the obstacle of no time to do it. And I'll talk about why I want to eliminate that obstacle after we're through. And just as a reminder, I've said this before, but sometimes the questions that strike us as too stupid or too much of a beginner kind of question to ask or a reflection to share is usually the best, the most helpful for everybody, because it gets to what we've all experienced and are afraid to talk about. So I throw it open. Does anybody feel like sharing some of the real or theoretical obstacles? Yeah.
I've been meditating like for 2.5 years, and I'm doing every day. I mean,
wow.
But I can't get past 30 minutes. I mean, I'm so clued into meditating. I have a little time with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I even try to increase it by increments of 5 minutes, but I just can't get hardly past that. I can pick up meditation at eating time, but there again, it's for about 30 minutes.
Wow.
I meditate during the daytime. I mean, it comes to me throughout the day. But, you know, I hear people that can meditate for 2 hours or 3 hours, and I can't get past 30 minutes.
Do you mind sharing with us why you would think it important to get past 30 minutes?
I guess I feel like after 2.5 years, I should be able to move on a little bit more than just sticking to the 30 minutes. And I think it's kind of a mindset I'm into, or my body, it just knows.
Okay. It might be two mindsets. The mindset that is that you can't get past 30 minutes, and the other mindset that you should. So we'll talk about those. Thank you. That's really good. And I think it's extremely universal. So I'm really glad you brought that up. Thanks. So one is duration of meditation and difficulty extending it. Any others?
I think having the right physical place that you go to all of the time. And for me, I just kind of revamped, refreshed where I sit. And it's draws me so much now.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of thinking that maybe if it starts feeling tired or cluttered, and all darn books start piling up, instead of putting back in the bookcase, and just keeping that space nice.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking maybe if the space is already nice, and that's been maintained, maybe adding flower or a candle or something to have me feel physically cold to want to sit there.
Yeah, thank you. That's really an important one. And a lot of teachers spend a lot of time talking about that. So setting, proper setting is another one. Finding the proper setting. Thanks. Any others?
Well, if I was irritated or in a bad mood, I'm not like sitting. And so now I'm working sitting most of the time in through those periods. I still have a hard time though maintaining like the time. Like I go 15, 20 minutes and I get kind of antsy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my favorite way to sit is not to have any time allotted, just something about that ding afterwards. So I kind of fluctuate on the time, but I'm working on practicing more daily, kind of through all the ups and downs.
So you bring up three things. One is the moods can really make it difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is the duration.
Duration, right.
And maybe it's just those two, mood and duration.
Well, then I think part of me likes the unstructured, just sit on the kitchen and just, I've had some really wonderful sittings, but I'm not trying to time it.
Right.
And then other times, I guess it's 7 minutes on up, so.
Okay, thanks. So, yeah, mood and duration, and then the actual structure of it. Should it be a structured? No, thanks. I think those are universal.
Having to deal with either meditation or physical issues that are changing your cognitive abilities.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us any kind of example of how your cognitive abilities might affect your meditation?
Easily distracted.
Okay.
I'm far more distracted now in the city than I was. That's duration in bringing myself back to where I am. Also, the welcoming all things and not holding on to things.
Mm-hmm.
That specifically is also causing a problem.
So, what to do with distractions and the frustration of that? And then, is that right? And then the difficulty in welcoming everything without attaching to it.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, those are really juicy problems. And we'll try to address those tonight. But it'll probably take us a couple years to address them fully. It's something we all struggle with. But, frustration with how we think it should be and the difficulty of welcoming without attaching. How we think it should be. Yeah, I'll get to that later too, because that's a core issue. Thank you. Other question? Yeah, go ahead.
I do better with routine, and summers are anything but routine for me.
Yes, routine.
And it just flows away.
Routine and rhythm.
Yep.
Really important obstacles. And again, universal. So good, yeah, thanks.
I learned to meditate with the James, and I was, the way I try, I just sort of made it up for myself. We were starting with we were going down the chakras and then up the spine. And so I do that. And then at some point, it just lets go, and I'm just in some kind of alone. I don't know what to say. It's just very quiet and it's very different. A lot of different times. Recently, I was meditating and I must have gotten a list of 40 things that I needed to accomplish. And I felt I was so in need of. I have trouble focusing now as I'm getting older, so I was so in need of that I went and got a piece of paper and just kept going and wrote them all down, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, that was just, it's different. It varies quite a bit. And I have trouble having what you call a regular practice.
Yes.
I just do it when I feel like doing it.
And yeah.
A lot of times at night and in bed.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up a lot, so.
Yeah. But waking up a lot is a wonderful opportunity for practice. But you're bringing up two really good things. One is the extreme variability of our experience in practice and how that can be frustrating, or it can make us feel like, are we doing it right? Is that? And then the other is the incredible urgency and pressure that can come up around the perception of a problem or a series of problems or a list of problems. Right? Am I getting it right?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you talk about concentrating on one thing, that's really hard for me to do.
Yes.
I try doing the breath, counting the breaths backwards, and it doesn't seem like it's just, that it's, I do better if I do the chakras. That's just because that's what I've been
right.
doing.
Sure.
So, I'm trying to breathe through the three, you know, the three places.
Perfect.
Like the guitar, and I can, but it's just easier to do it the way it is. So I don't know what I should do.
Okay. And again, the word should. We'll deal with that. The word should has come up a lot tonight, and it is one of the major obstacles to meditation. And I really appreciate you bringing up the fact that there's such variability, because we also have a should around that. It shouldn't be. And then the incredible urgency of the problems that need to be solved. Again, universal. And you also mentioned the difficulty with concentration. And let me assure you, you're not alone. I share that, and most everybody does. But thanks, those are really important points. Over here first.
I'm just going to say that I just couldn't wrap my head around the theory that I wanted to concentrate on my breath for 30 minutes or be white blank as a clean slate for 30 minutes and I'll be dead soon enough. And then I ran across, I'm probably not saying his name right,
Eknath Ishwaran.
And his meditation program with the sacred scriptures and memorizing that. And I'm finding that just this wonderful breakthrough that I find the scriptures so meaningful. And by concentrating on a passage that I can truly memorize in 30 minutes, I'm getting much more out of the passage than ever just reading it.
Right.
And I'm finding that and his passages cover the sacred literatures of the world, and that the Judeo and Christian scriptures resonate more with me because that's my cultural background, and I have more difficulty memorizing the Indian scriptures.
Sure. So thanks. Just for the purpose of the recording, let me repeat if I think I've got it right. There are two obstacles you're noticing. One is the following the breath for 30 minutes or any length of time. You're finding following the breath somewhat difficult or not really attaching to it, not really connecting with it. Is that right? And then the other is the idea that you should have a kind of blank slate mind for whatever period of time, 30 minutes. Again, the should word coming up. We'll get to that. For those of you who aren't familiar with Ishwaran, he teaches what's called passage meditation, where, just like you described, memorize inspirational passages and use those as your focus rather than the breath. And his theory is that you get two benefits. You have a focus of your concentration, just like we have with the breath in this lineage. And you're also kind of almost by osmosis getting the benefits of these highly charged spiritual teachings as you recite them. And there's a couple other people in the group tonight who have studied those practices and found them very helpful. So yeah, it's, again, what is the focus of the practice? What is the focus of the meditation? If we look at meditation as having two wings, a bird with two wings. One wing is the concentration, one wing is the insight. And the concentration can be anything. It can be a passage, a mantra, a visualization, the breath. People have used jillions of them. It can be each step in walking. So the actual object tends to just vary with the tradition and the teacher. Whereas behind the actual object is the wing of concentration, what the Buddha called earning to tame your mind, to put it where you want it to be and slowly get it to wander off less often. So the benefit of the concentration wing is that the control shifts from your distractedness controlling you to you controlling your distractedness. And then whichever object of concentration there is, even in passage meditation, insights start to arise over time as the mind calms down. We'll get to the sheds in a bit. Thank you. Did I miss something? Okay. Yeah.
Let's see if I can remember where I was. And it actually is similar to the last two. Part of it, she's saying about a lot going on in your mind and all of that. And I actually find when I sit down, well, all during the day, I'm busy and my mind is busy and there's all, you know, all this stuff going on. And then I sit down and it's actually hard for me to grasp my mind around the concept that I'm supposed to stop thinking. You know, it's like, oh, I'm sitting down. It's a perfect time to think. Because I haven't had time to just think all day.
Right.
So it's the perfect time to do that.
Yes.
And yet I'm not supposed to, should.
Thank you.
So it's getting, you know, getting my mind around that or figuring out just how to do it. And the other is actually related of not really knowing, well, it is really the same thing, not really knowing how to do the thinking part of meditation at first. And I'm relatively new to it, but at first I thought it was just the blank slate. And I've only picked up bits and pieces from here about, oh, yeah, there's also meditation with thinking. And so it's a lack of knowledge of how to think.
Okay. So the question you're raising circles around thinking and the stream of thoughts and the allure of the stream of thoughts. And what do we do with that? And... good. I'll try to address that. Sharon.
I think the two obstacles I have to do with setting and routine.
Yes.
So I'm in my routine.
Setting and routine are obstacles.
Routine is great, but if it's broken,
yes,
then I get discombobulated.
Okay.
If I can't be in my setting that I'm used to, then I can't. Establish the routine somewhere else.
Right. So setting and routine. And yes, if you're traveling, for example, and don't have your familiar setting, what do you do?
Or routine.
Yes. Or routine.
It's like I don't have my dance
with me. Yes. What do we do?
I just want to ask, may I answer that?
Sure.
With me, it's the routine is broken majorly when I go to the cabin at Kootenai Lake and there's all these people.
Yes.
They're with me.
Yes.
Relatives, friends.
Yes.
Or I'm with my daughter and I'm visiting my dad in Bremerton.
That's very difficult. Whether you're breaking your routine with travel or with people or visitors or visiting. Yes. Big problem. Thanks. Peter.
I seem to be a little frustrated with backsliding.
Backsliding in what way?
You know, the summer's so busy. And so the length of my meditations seem to be going backwards instead of forwards.
Okay, backsliding in terms of the duration of sitting.
And also sometimes my quality of mind, sometimes my mind is seems to run amok. And,
mind running amok.
I think that's also related to business.
It's interesting that you called it quality of mind. By quality, do you mean a value judgment in terms of good quality, bad quality?
Oh, I noticed that one of the things I noticed just the other day was I was sort of angry with myself for not not having more concentrated mind during my sitting. You know, that type of thing, instead of being grateful for the opportunity, you know, and my mind. My mind and my general practice, I think, not having this usual vigor. You know,
mm-hmm. Not yet.
Don't have time to read as much.
Right. So, not the usual vigor, kind of a dilution because of all that's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, also fairly common. Very common. Okay, well, thank you. Anybody?
Did you have enough problems?
Oh, I mean, more problems are great. More problems are wonderful.
Having established a dedicated sacred space and a time that's essentially not inviolable, but I, because of where it is in my day, at the beginning of the day, you've got to get out of bed at some point, and that's the point at which the practice begins, you know. So it's always that opportunity. But it's the thing that I have noticed is that having this set time, set place, set situation, a format for the sitting and so forth, and a certain duration, whether it's 45 minutes or whatever you're doing, and it's almost like when you fall into your favorite comfortable chair.
Right.
You're not as, I don't want to say productive, but you're not as curious, and as there isn't the intensity that's there when it's the beginner's mind.
Yes.
Approach it, and it becomes almost a, you sit, you're there, you're not distracted by thoughts, but at the end of 45 minutes, it was kind of flat. There was no real juice or energy mm-hmm. going on there.
Great.
And that's the, to me, the downside of this set pattern.
Yes, you're right.
Which is easy to fall into, uh-huh. Kind of a laid-back approach to it once you hit the bench.
So, again, for the purpose of the recording, once you have it all set up, the time, the place, the routine, the practice, how to keep it fresh.
Right.
How to keep it fresh is a really big problem. It's a really good problem because it means that you've had some success in setting it up, but still, big problem.
There is this real life something. And it doesn't even matter if it goes on the recording or not, because what I realized was after I said it, just sitting here, I realized I had all the answers. I actually know what to do.
Wonderful.
And so that is just like, wow.
Self-arising solutions are good.
Yeah.
One of the advantages of this group process is that fertility can do that, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So let me try to summarize what I've heard and try to address it. One common obstacle could be put under the rubric of should. We all make the mistake of approaching meditation as a solemn, serious, formal, special, guilt-inducing should. And we all have an idea about how it should be, and ought to be, and must be, and how long it should be, and what our mind should be doing in it, or not doing. And huge problem. It's interesting. I promised I would talk about the time. Well, I didn't want you to talk about time. Time is the universal complaint at the beginning. I'm not meditating because I don't have time. Now, there are a couple of circumstances where I have absolutely nothing to say about that. A single parent raising children and being the sole breadwinner and dealing with all those stresses very likely doesn't have time. A person dealing with a chronic illness and all that that entails quite often doesn't have time. But the rest of us can ask the question, well, if I were offered an extra $1,000 a month to generate a half hour a day where I sit down at my desk and write a report every single day and post it, most of us would find the time to do that. So the time is findable. Every dedicated meditator I know started out by saying, I don't have time. So that one we can just say, that's a relative, universal beginning problem, and there are solutions to it. And those solutions depend on some other factors that we'll get into. So let's go back. The formal shitting practice. Some very famous teachers warn us against that. One teacher I really respect says that it's most important to not think of meditation as a formal, solemn event. The other thing that happens, and I'll get to that in more detail, the other thing that happens is that we have subtle resistance to what is. Lots of thoughts. We think a good meditator shouldn't have lots of thoughts. A list of problems that's compelling us. We think a good meditator shouldn't have that. A busy mind. Emotional turmoil. You name it. Name all the things you think you shouldn't have in meditation. And then think about how in subtle ways you push away when those come up. Or instead of just letting go gently, acknowledging, letting go, and coming back to your practice, you kind of drop it, turn your back on it. That subtle resistance is really an important obstacle to meditation, and yet it's often below our radar. But it is related to shoulds. I shouldn't have that. Meditation should be this way. I shouldn't be thinking those thoughts. So, any questions about that? Those two things. It should be a formal, special, solemn, guilt-inducing thing, and I shouldn't have those thoughts, those emotions, those lists, those turmoils, those whatevers that you all brought up. Okay, we all deal with those two things. So, here's a proposal. I'm going to start with doing something my teacher's teacher thought was valuable. He called it, in his broken English, he was a Tibetan, he called it target showing. Showing you where we're going, where meditation is opening the way for us. Ultimately, when we clear away all of the other things, meditation is to try to come to the Buddha's realization. We are trying to realize, experience, recognize Buddha nature. The trick is that Buddha nature is just this, simply this. There is nothing to get. Buddha nature is everything that's arising at any moment, here and now. Just this, simply this. There's one catch, and that is that our training allows us to get to where we can recognize that without being in the way of it. Right now, we're in the way of the recognition of Buddha nature. One of my best teachings I ever received was this. These teachings and practices will work if you get out of the way. And the training is just that. to get out of the way. How are we in the way? The poisons, attachment, aversion, ignorance, habitual patterns, which in our case are almost universally shoulds. In other words, what we have created as our own little separate self. The religion of most people on this planet is the religion of this is me, I am that, I need that, I don't need that, I want that, I don't want that. Our own personal story is our religion. That's what's in the way. Recognition comes when we can actually perceive what's arising in any moment without all of that in the way. So we train in order to let that go. So I'm going to suggest that Frank has already given us a beautiful model for meditation in the repeating questions. For those of you who haven't done the repeating questions with Frank, he'll ask a question like, he puts us into dyads and draws straws to see who goes first. And the person who goes first asks the question, such as, how do you experience love? And the person sitting opposite gives an answer. And the questioner says, thank you, and repeats the question, how do you experience love? Person thinks deeper, feels deeper, answers again, and the questioner says, thank you. How do you experience love? And so that's the repeating questions. That's really what meditation is. Except the questions in meditation are a form of inquiry. Mindfulness is a form of inquiry. Noticing is a form of inquiry. The inquiry is, what is happening here? What is going on now? That's the inquiry of mindfulness. So we sit and we ask through mindfulness. That's an implied question, or you can ask it to train in it just by speaking it. What is happening? What is here? That's mindfulness. Something comes up. It could be a mood. It could be an expectation of time duration. It could be a series of thoughts. It could be anything. A noise, a smell, a sensation, a hurt knee. Whatever is coming up, your question has been answered and you say, thank you. And then you say, what is happening now? Dog barks, thank you. What is happening now? A stream of thoughts, thank you. What is happening now? An irritation, thank you. What is happening now? You see, that's meditation. It can be true in passage meditation too. You're going along and a dog barks, thank you. Any questions about this? Because this is a different way of actually looking at what we're doing.
Sounds like a very busy mind going on.
Well?
If you're constantly inquiring what's going on now.
Right. And that inquiry is my way of just trying to transmit what mindfulness is. You don't actually have to be asking that question. As soon as you realize that that is mindfulness, that question, what is going on now? What is going on here? What is happening? That's mindfulness. So you don't have to keep asking the question. What I'm suggesting, though, is that whatever comes up, you have the attitude of thank you. Because that is what the universe is presenting you in that moment. Thank you. Come back to the focus. The cooks clatter the pans in the kitchen. Thank you. Come back. You suddenly have an overwhelming pain in your knee. Thank you. Come
when
back.
You notice that you've left. Thank you.
Right. It's just noticing. So it's a different way of saying the same thing. You're noticing. You're coming back, you're letting go, you know, that same thing that we've taught all the way along. Something comes up. It might not even take you away, but you notice it come back to the breath. Thank you. That's the change. Thank you is different from the frustration of should. By the way, we didn't have watches or clocks until very recently. We had no idea how long we were meditating. There was no way to tell. The idea of the 30-minute sit is a very recent kind of thing. And I know of very little evidence that 30 minutes is better than 60 minutes. So the frustration arises at the end of 30 minutes. Ah, thank you. And then you can do what you want. You can try for more if you want to, but question the shoulds. Now, this is a fairly radical way of looking at meditation, and I'm not suggesting it's the right way. I'm just saying this might be something of an antidote to these things that you've brought up tonight. Just the gratitude. This is what the universe is giving us at this moment. Thank you. Come back to the breath. The thank you protects us from pushing away. And it's really no different from what Frank has been asking us to do anyway.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
One of the things that's helped me a lot with the shoulds, having the shoulds in my process, was coming back to Frank's teaching of a loving, holding environment, and finding that that environment is an environment that I create within myself.
Exactly.
And that inner environment is the ideal of being spacious, mm-hmm. and welcoming,
yes.
and opening to everything, so that I'm actually being kind to myself instead of going, oh darn,
yes,
oh darn. You know, it's like, no, I have this environment, which I think the environment is actually the qualities of Buddha nature, isn't it?
Absolutely is. The loving, holding environment is here. The four immeasurables point to it: love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Several of the paramitas point to it: generosity, patience, joyful diligence. So, yes, that's the loving, holding environment, the welcoming everything, are different ways of doing it, different ways of saying thank you. Peter.
So, last winter I got to do a personal retreat and I was reading Tara Brach, and she mentioned something like that. Say thank you to everything that came up.
Yes.
And so I did that, I'd meditate for half a day. And it was turned out to be just lovely. It really livened me up.
Mm-hmm.
It felt great. And the next day I got a bad phone call first thing in the morning, well, negative phone call. And at the end of the day, when I was looking over my notes, it was day and night. And meditation, her meditation, and the meditation was phone call dominated.
Sure. Right. It is very hard to be thankful for bad news. This is just a way of orienting ourselves away from the shoulds, away from the self-criticisms, away from the tendency to push away stuff that we think is not spiritually appropriate. We welcome everything. And so the little thank you just helps underscore that. Push away nothing, and there's not as much push to push it away if we're thanking it. You know, so it's just another way of orienting ourselves in that direction. So in order to address some of the issues you brought up, I would propose that attitude. We don't have to be asking those questions. They're implied in mindfulness. What's happening? What is here now? But if we forget what mindfulness is, we can ask those questions again a few times to get back on track. And then thanking everything that comes up. Because ultimately, once we have attained the recognition of Buddha nature, we will be in the position of actually living that loving, holding environment universally, loving and welcoming everything that comes up. So we're practicing as if we're closer than we might feel. So there's three things that we can do in daily practice to help overcome some of the issues you brought up. This is just an acronym for remembering it. You know, there's the acronym DBA, doing business as. So there's another way we could do it. We could have an acronym DPA, doing practice as a way to remember it. The D stands for diligence. Diligence is the core of training. Diligence means setting up the causes and conditions. So we've talked about most of them. Having a time and a place are the core parts of it, and just doing it. And that's the hardest part of training in any of these things I mentioned, you know, nutrition, exercise, memorization, sleep hygiene. It's the actual doing it. But there's tremendous value in just getting yourself to stop in the same place, geographically, physically, a little meditation place, really helps. And an altar really helps, a flower really helps. Whatever you can do to have a place that creates that contains the reminders, this is my place to stop. And I would suggest that if you can, just stop in that place every day, you'll achieve something wonderful. And I wouldn't even ask you how long you stopped for or what you did when you were stopped. I would just say, if you can stop in the same place every day, you will have achieved something wonderful, and you'll notice it. And you'll be able to ask yourself after a while, do I notice anything different about myself? Am I calmer? Am I more patient? Am I less reactive? And you'll notice some changes. And we haven't even talked about meditation technique. We haven't even talked about how long you're stopping. We haven't even talked about any of that. Just the act of stopping, the forward momentum, every day, hopefully in the same place, just because it's a support. Same time as a support, too. Having the phone off is another support. Tremendous, tremendous value. So the P, doing practice. Practice is this is my way of remembering the acronym. The P actually stands for posture. And posture actually stands for the bodily conditions. And there aren't very many rules about that, but there are some helpful guidelines. One is that we stop our forward momentum as far as the rush. The other is that we try to maintain an erect spine. Neck and spine should be erect. It can be in one of four postures. It can be sitting on a cushion. It can be sitting on a chair. It can be standing, or it can be walking. Walking meditation is an advanced practice, and I don't recommend that you start with that, but you can use it as a skillful means if other things aren't working. Breath is another one. Breathing free and easy helps. Not having your breath all held in here. The things that Linda went over so beautifully earlier, settling, grounding, feeling alignment, noticing sensations, they all bring you into the here and now. The eyes, another skillful means. The Buddha never said what to do with your eyes. In our lineage, we're generally taught to keep them closed, but there have been other teachers, a famous Thai monk who said that he found that it was much better for beginners to have the eyes open. In general, I would say use your judgment. If you're feeling really agitated, make sure your eyes are closed. If you're feeling drowsy that day, have your eyes open, looking down someplace between 3 and 6 feet away. It makes it far easier to stay awake. And staying awake is one of the things that really helps meditation. And I would put also in posture, because we're talking about the setup, keeping it fresh. And my teacher is really just on fire about keeping practice fresh. And as soon as he gets any hint that it's becoming rote, he wants to throw a monkey wrench in it and make it change. So even though all of these things that we're setting up in the diligence and the posture are great aids and supports, if you start to get stale, do something different. Sit somewhere else or go to walking meditation or sit outside or redecorate the room. Do something to freshen it up, because roteness is not helpful any more than drowsiness is. And then A, doing practice as, the A actually stands for attitude in this little mnemonic. And the attitude is the attitude of openness, acceptance, gratitude, welcoming. And if you just remember openness and gratitude, you get the P part. Welcome everything, literally. And if you can't welcome it, then take it and say thank you anyway, just to start changing your mind. And I've already talked too long, but that's the core of it. So the basic obstacles are that we have too many shoulds, expectations about practice being solemn, serious, guilt-inducing, shoulding, and this subtle thing of resistance, where if something comes up that we think isn't right, we just try to shove it under the rug. Yeah. So thank you instead. And then setting up the causes and conditions, DPA, diligence, posture, attitude. Any questions? I've given you far too much information tonight. We can go over this later, but if you have a should, the hair on the back of your neck should go up. And look around and see if you're actually welcoming and grateful. That's the attitude part. Open, welcoming, gratitude for whatever the universe is presenting you in that moment. Surely there are some questions.
I just have a comment. When Linda did a session on breath, she emphasized, well, if that doesn't work for you, you know, try this other one. And I walked out so much lighter, you know, just that attitude of openness and graciousness, that there are many ways to approach it.
Many, many, many ways. And again, that target showing. Why are we doing this? We're trying to get out of the way so that we can truly recognize Buddha nature, which is just simply this, without all of these obscurations and obstructions that we are now currently habitually carrying with us. So what are the hints that we're in the way? Well, shoulding is one of them. It's a big one. Frustration is another. Because if we're frustrated, then we've been shoulding and didn't even know it. And it doesn't mean that there aren't some guidelines for meditation that have been found helpful over the last 2,500 years. But the Buddha also said, try these things out, see what works. You know, passage meditation will work better for many people than this classic Vipassana meditation, but not for everybody. Find out what works for you, but keep in mind those three things. It requires diligence, it requires the posture, meaning the right physical conditions, and it requires the attitude of openness, acceptance, gratitude. Thank you. Coming back. The two wings of the bird really are important. We have to tame our minds, so we have to keep coming back to some focus. And we have to be open. That's the inquiry part. What's happening? What's happening now? What's going on? What's here? What's the universe giving me? And then we start to get little insights as we open to that. So both are important. So I would ask you to try this diligence, posture, attitude, starting in the next couple minutes when we do a little meditation, and then carry it forward. Diligence is just doing it every day, and that's all that you need to do. Not asking how long, not asking what you do, just some facsimile of this direction we're heading. And then set up the right conditions, which are mainly physical, you know, proper posture, breath, settling, contact, grounding, sensation, all of which bring you here and now, and attitude of openness, welcoming, gratitude, and see what happens. So let's sit for a few minutes. Thich Nhat Hanh said, whatever your posture is, add a little half smile. It helps remind you about this attitude that is so helpful in meditation.